Kevin Stefanski and Andrew Berry, do you think that they are good at what they do?
Yeah, I think so. Well, Stefanski, two-time coach of the year. Andrew Berry, I don't know. Do we blame the Haslams for the Deshaun Watson debacle?
The questions and the criticisms are more about ownership than anybody on the sideline or in the GM.
He's the head coach of a franchise owned by Jimmy Haslam, so who knows? If you put him in a more stable situation with a less volatile compound in the owner's box, maybe you'd get more.
The Ken Carmen Show with Anthony Lima on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, and wherever you get your podcasts.
All right, Clint, before we get to our college football slate, don't get trigger happy yet, Tyler. I'm not ready for the music yet. I'm you know, I get excited. I'm not ready yet. I do want to pass along, Clint, from the Buccaneers' perspective on the injury report. Mike Evans didn't practice today. It was due to rest. I think a big one here, though, to watch is Chris Godwin. He did not practice. He was limited yesterday. He didn't practice at all today. And also Luke Goodkey, the tackle you were talking about.
Yeah.
Second straight day, he didn't practice.
The right tackle, correct?
Yeah, the right tackle. He may not be out. He may be out in this game. He didn't practice the last 2 days. And then Tristan Wirfs, their all-pro left tackle, was limited again. So those are the ones to watch. Hassan Reddick jumped from being limited yesterday, and he was a full participant, another key guy on the outside for them. So that is the latest injury report, not just from the Texans side of things, but from the Bucs. And they may have some issues with their tackle situation. And then Chris Godwin, that's one to watch too. They didn't play in game one. And him going from practicing yesterday to not practicing at all is an interesting sign.
Well, they are an absolute bear when they're fully healthy. When they got both of their tackles healthy, when they've got all three of their wide receivers, counting the youngster that they drafted this year out of Ohio State, they are an absolute problem offensively, yep. Man. I mean, in the pass world, I don't know how well they're going to run it all year long, but they, in terms of throwing the football and being aggressive down the field, they are an absolute monster. But you got two tackles that at the very least are going to be hobbled. You got one of the wide receivers that is hobbled as well, and Godwin, as you mentioned. So that'll slow them down just a little bit. It's interesting how this thing's going to match up. You look at our tackles versus really Reddick. Reddick had a big game-changing sack last week. You know, our tackles versus him, I think, is a big-time matchup. And then their tackles, whoever it is, either banged-up starters or backups versus our defensive ends, I mean, that will absolutely change the game. On both sides of the football, those defenses can absolutely change the game in a major way. So those are matchups to watch. It's a Monday night game, so this is not the final injury report.
No,
but it is very telling who's practicing and who's not.
All right, let's get it. Our Saturday slate coming through. I'm watching and seeing some folks text in Colorado and Houston tonight. Yeah, that'll be a good one. I know. Dion is changing quarterbacks here, so that'll be one to watch as well. You can text in, what's your game of the week, your college football game of the week? We do it every Friday, our Saturday slate. Tyler, I think we know where you are. We'll save you for last because you actually, I'm guessing, have the game of the day. But
you're probably Clint, thinking the right way, for sure.
All right, Clint, what's your game of the weekend that you're really into this?
I'm into a lot of them. Yeah, the Florida LSU game is sexy. I mean, you talk about a monster game for coaching, you know, job security, or you know, in the national landscape for both of those programs. That's a monster one. But I've got to go with the Georgia at Tennessee game. This one fascinates me. I mean, it's a monster game. Look, I view Tennessee as one of the powerhouses in the SEC. But the quarterback situation at Tennessee just fascinates the hell out of me. You know, last year, and I don't know all the details, but last year, you know, the quarterback that was there took him to the college football playoffs, and word on the street is leading up to the college football playoffs, his representation, whether that's his family or his NIL, I mean, his agent, whatever, you know, started some rumblings about pay us more money or we're not going to play in the college football playoffs, like holding the program hostage. Like, that's about as bad as it can get as a player and what they do to a team. And, again, I don't know all the details of it.
Didn't look real good for him at UCLA last year.
Well, that's where I was going with it, right? So he bounces, ends up taking, a million-dollar hit going to UCLA. They clean it all up by saying, yeah, but I'm closer to my family and all this stuff. I'm going to tell you what, $1 million, I can get real close to my family whenever I want. I can bring them to me if I want to for $1 million. But, you know, that whole dynamic, they had to go out. He really left them in a bad spot, and they had to go out and get a quarterback. last second. They bring a guy in. Nobody thought he was going to be very good. He's playing really well. The program, they feel good about it early in the year. And if they can beat Georgia at home with this quarterback, I don't know. I mean, it's going to be a great game. It's a bunch of great games. I think the storyline of the quarterback situation at Tennessee is really fascinating.
And we don't know a lot about Georgia right now. We don't know what they've played.
Right, right. And for people that are in a lot of people that are my age and older are put out with the whole NIL and the transfer portal and not being a man of your word and all those kind of things. I think that resonates with a lot of older college football fans, and it does with me for sure. And so I would pick the Georgia-Tennessee game just because the fascination with that quarterback situation of the old boy that bounced. They're not going to win very many games at UCLA. He took a hit, and it's really all up to if this kid at Tennessee now can play well, boy, it's really going to be pie on the face of old boy that bounced. And I don't know. I mean, he's a kid. I mean, it's not a major ordeal, but there's that extra layer there with that game for me. And it's Tennessee, so if they lose, I win there as well.
I know you feel that. All right, Tyler, before we get to your game, I'll go Florida-LSU. You talked about it a bit. I've never seen a coach get fired on the field, and I feel like it's in the cards for Billy Napier. I think if Billy Napier loses that game, he's done. And he probably should lose that game. Maybe if it's tight, maybe if it's close. He survived a tight one with Tennessee last year when it looked like he was on the beyond hot seat, and then they were able to turn it around. But they lost at home to South Florida, and South Florida is a good team. They're one of the games that matches two ranked teams as they go to Miami. But that was embarrassing, 18-16, and you're an offensive guru like you're supposed to be. And then LSU had a great first win against Clemson. And they are in damn sure playoff championship or bust, and they need to follow that up at home, and they can't lose to this Florida team. So that one's the game that I'm really looking at to see what happens with the coaches there and to see where LSU is.
Well, what a hell of a quarterback matchup. I mean, you know, the Nussmeier kid has a chance to be the best quarterback in college football. We'll see how it all unfolds. I think he's got a chance to be the best passer in college football, and we'll see what that looks like. But he's in that conversation.
Yeah.
You know, and in Florida, you know, I mean, they got a kid from right around the corner here, DJ Lagway. So, I mean, they've got a local kid here. So that quarterback matchup is going to be fun to watch there in that ball game.
Where's DJ from?
Porter.
Okay.
Is it Porter?
I'll look it up.
Up on the north. It's the north side somewhere. But
all right, Tyler. We know yours is A&M and Notre Dame.
Here we go.
All right, hey, let's. I trust you. How? What's your real thoughts about this game, Tyler? As they go on the road, shout out to Andy's wife walking in. Tyler, what's your thoughts of this game?
Well, let me paint a picture for you, Ron.
Oh, yeah. Here we go.
It's Saturday night. Them lights are bright up there in Notre Dame, and the number 16 Aggies are coming in to face off against number 8, the Fighting Irish. And the Aggies are winning this ball game, boys. And I'm telling you now, this is the turning point. Right now today, you can shut a lot of people up who've been talking, rightfully so. But just the Texas A&M Aggies have not won on the road against a top 10 opponent since 2014. That stat's been floating around all week. It's real. It's there. Change it, man. Change it. Maroon and White going to Notre Dame. This is your game of the week. It's going to be awesome. Sean Pendergast is going to be upset, but Aggies win this one, man, and we'll talk more about that later in the show, I'm sure. But
they're clearly underdogs. But what's the line in that, Tyler? I know I'm certain it make an appearance.
I think it's moved. I think it's climbed a little bit, hasn't it?
Yeah, it's somewhere around
six or seven.
Six
and a half, I think. Yeah, six and a half on that as A&M are underdogs. Listen, I think this game is winnable. Notre Dame is good, and I think their quarterback is a lot better than I thought he was going to be. I thought it may be a little slow for C.J. Carr, but he looked pretty good on the road against Miami. But I do think this game is winnable for A&M. We'll see if they can go and do that, but I think it is winnable for them.
For sure it
is. Oh, no, look, A.T., it is absolutely winnable, but it depends on one thing. Marcellus Reed, right? I mean, is it Marcel, not Marcellus? I put a us on there, didn't I?
It's Marcel might be his Reed. Legal name.
I like that.
Yeah, maybe his real name. Maybe he shortened it.
I like that, Marcellus.
Arkansas is in a very similar position as Texas A&M. And easy, Aggies. I know y'all beat us 11 of the last 12 or whatever. Relax. I'm just talking ball here.
We'll play soon enough, okay?
Like your ultimate, like the floor for both programs, I think is higher than typical, right? Because you got an athletic ability that's not going to allow teams lesser than you to beat you. You got an athletic ability that's going to keep you in games that maybe you probably shouldn't be in, but yet you've got a QB with the athletic ability. If they develop and start spinning around the park when the game, you know, demands them to do that, then all of a sudden you've got a program at A&M, not so much Arkansas, but you got a program at A&M that can compete for national titles. You got a program, both of those kids could end up in a Heisman conversation if they can win enough games. So it's very, very similar of yes, it's been really good at A&M to start the season. Yes, it's been really good at Arkansas from a quarterback perspective to start the season. Those guys have been the best athletes on the field. When they stack them up against a defense that is as good as your guys, does that athletic ability still stand out? Does their ability to spin the rock, you know, take them to the next level, right? That's what's beautiful about this Saturday for both of those games, man. Arkansas, Ole Miss, Notre Dame, A&M. You're going to find out this week if your quarterback can legitimately take you to a 10, 11, 12-win season and potentially, for A&M, a national title hunt or not.
I hear, Tyler, they beat LSU last year, but can you win a big game?